I did know Margie, and she was an amazing lady, and I know she was treasured by so many people, and I truly can see her caring that much for Bill and loving him that well to give him permission to have life after she passed. And so I just was very amazed by that.
I see her in my kids, things that remind me of her every time I see them. Something they said, an expression on their face. There's something there.
Hey, welcome. This is Family Life Blended, and I'm Ron Deal. This donor-supported podcast helps blended families and those who love them pursue the relationships that matter most. This is episode number 85, and it's entitled Terrible Loss, Unexpected Love. We'll get into that in just a minute. But before we do, a quick reminder that this podcast is donor supported. Now, you can show your gratitude for this podcast at any time. All you got to do is go to the show notes. It'll show you a link where you can make a donation of any amount. And believe me, everything helps. But I did want to let you know that we have a special opportunity coming up in the first 2 weeks of September. Some generous donors have come alongside us, and they've provided some upfront funds. So for every dollar we gather in the first 2 weeks of September, they will match it. It's a matching gift opportunity. Would you please be praying about joining us in that September match? It's going to be the first 2 weeks, basically leading up to September 16th, which is National Step Family Day. We'd love for you to be a part of that. Now, to those of you listening in the United States, happy birthday. Well, maybe I should say happy Independence Day. Today, the release of this episode is the 4th of July, 2022. So we're officially celebrating the birthday of our country. As we always remember, freedom is not free. Thousands of people gave their lives for this country leading up to July 4th, 1776, when our Constitution was officially adopted. And dare I say, since that time, many, many more have given their lives to protect our country and advance our nation's interests. We're actually going to be hearing about one such national hero today. We're going to talk with the widow he left behind and the man she later married, and we're going to hear about their blended family journey. Bill Thompson is a 27-year career veteran of the U.S. Navy. He was a communications specialist, intelligence officer, and investigator for the NCIS. Since retirement, he has worked in business development and sales, and his latest role is as a marketplace chaplain. Bill was widowed when his first wife, Margie, passed away, leaving him with his two children. Evelyn Husband Thompson is the widow of Columbia Space Shuttle Commander Rick Husband, who died in 2003 when Columbia, the space shuttle that he was commanding, broke apart upon reentry. Evelyn and her two children were thrust into a life they never imagined. Eventually, she would begin to speak across the nation about their experience, and she wrote a book. The book's called High Calling, The Courageous Life and Faith of Space Shuttle Commander Rick Husband. That book captured his life and their journey of faith with God together. So, after each being widowed, Bill and Evelyn married in January 2008. Now, I just want to mention here that Evelyn wrote the foreword for my book, The Smart Step Family Marriage, co-authored with Dr. David Olson, and that she and her husband, Bill, have been friends to Nan and I for many, many years, and we cherish their friendship very, very much. Here now is my conversation with Bill and Evelyn Thompson. Bill, Evelyn, you know, we've been friends for over a decade now. And as I was thinking about this conversation, I thought, you know, all three of us have suffered great loss in our lives. Each of you have lost a previous spouse to death, and I lost a child to death. And I would also add that all of us have experienced God's grace and joy in the midst of our pain and suffering. We've seen that on the other side. And I think you guys would agree with me that comfort and pain seem to travel side by side with us. Even in the midst of the beauty, there's that presence of that sadness and pain, and they just sort of travel together.
Yes.
What's your reaction to the idea? You've heard the phrase before, beauty from ashes. What's your response to that phrase?
Well, I have a t-shirt that has that on it now. So,
is that right?
And I took a picture wearing that t-shirt in front of the hotel that Laura, Matthew, and I stayed in Florida the morning we departed to go see Rick Land. After his space shuttle mission, and of course he never did. So to return to the beach area with that hotel in the background was very significant to me, to wear that t-shirt, because as painful as some of those places are to revisit, I do marvel at God's faithfulness and navigating us through. I don't think the grief will ever go away, but it does change.
Yeah, it does change. We're going to get into the backstory that you've already referenced here in just a minute. Bill, let me just ask you, what do you think is misunderstood about grief?
It's something that can be looked at just on a calendar day, or I think it's something that we see, it sneaks up on us a lot of times. It's something that never quite ever goes away, and it can be brought back and without a moment's notice. But it's something that we walk parallel with in our lives. We have pain and we have peace. And I think when we're going through that pain, the thing for me is always knowing that there is a great peace that I can also walk into. But it means I probably need to walk through some of that pain in order to get there.
You know, I guess my reaction as I'm listening to you guys to the phrase beauty for ashes, and I know it comes out of a scripture passage in Isaiah chapter 61. I always feel like I need to add something onto it. When people say beauty from ashes or beauty for ashes, I always want to say yes, and beauty does not erase the ashes. I think sometimes people have this notion that, well, if we could just find the beauty, then the pain goes away. If we can just find the good out of the bad, if we can just find what God seems to be purposing in all of this, then somehow Ron will feel better about his son's death, or, you know, whatever the story. And I just want to say to people, no, I don't think that's the way it works. We still carry the ashes with us. We still experience them, even in the midst of the beauty. But the beauty rises above. The beauty carries us through the ashes. The beauty gives us reason and purpose to keep going. And if there's anything to me that blended family represents, it's the potential beauty from the ashes. Death, divorce, dissolution of a relationship between parents, whatever the backstory is, here is that thing that can be the beauty, but you still carry with you that memory and pain and the angst from the ashes. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this hand that I'm holding while we're doing this interview is the beauty. But the ashes, I agree wholeheartedly with you, never go away. I think the greatest surprise to me is, and maybe you've discovered this as well, but the greatest surprise to me is that my life could actually go on and I don't just survive, that I could actually thrive. I just really didn't anticipate that that was possible. And so that's been a huge blessing in my life to see that I have survived and will be able to thrive. That does not mean that I don't grieve. I still grieve. And I know Bill still does. So that, I agree wholeheartedly with you, the ashes do not go away, but the Lord does sprout beauty in the midst of that, if you allow him to.
Okay, let's get into the backstory a little bit. Bill, how'd you lose your first wife, Margie?
Well, as you well know, I met Margie my college days. We got married, and it was in 1977. And we are cruising along in life, having kids, growing in our family, growing in our jobs, and then found out that she had cancer when she was only 38 years old. We fought that battle for 12 and a half years, and she finally succumbed to it. But we were blessed. It made us slow life down considerably. And what we did is we learned how to live day to day and one day at a time. And much different than what Evelyn experienced losing Rick. But it's still hard to believe that that was 15 years ago. And yet it still permeates in from time to time. While we were thinking, and I don't want to lose this thought, we were talking about how some of these things pop up. My stepson Matthew and I were at lunch yesterday, and as I was walking over to grab a drink, I looked over and saw a picture of Rick and his crew just right there at our favorite restaurant, a barbecue place just south of town. And I thought, what an honor it is that that torch got passed without ever getting to hold or really talk to Rick. But I know it's something he would have enjoyed, being able to sit with his son and break bread together and just watching the marvel of a now a 26-year-old in front of him. And I stopped and paused experiencing that yesterday and was just amazed.
Wow. So you were at lunch at a restaurant, and on the wall is a picture of Matthew's dad and his crew. Wow. That's that life in the shadow of a national hero thing. I asked you about that once. I don't know if you remember what you said, but I asked you, is that ever intimidating to you as a stepfather to live in that shadow?
I think sometimes it is, but I kind of found my own way and I got really kind of comfortable in my own skin, Ron. I know not on any type of level of what Rick accomplished, but I am very blessed. And as Evelyn said, I'm also holding a hand here that blesses me beyond anything I could have imagined after losing Margie. I had no idea. I said, God, what now? What's next? Because I couldn't see anything beyond the pain of just an emptiness that had set there.
That's a really good takeaway for our step-parents who are listening. Get comfortable in your own skin. Find your own voice. Be yourself, no matter who that previous parent was or is. Bill, you and your wife, Margie, had two children, Corey and Cassie. And about how old were they when their mother passed away?
Well, they were in their 20s.
Yeah, and one of the things it's so beautiful about your story is that she was diagnosed with a fast-moving form of breast cancer, if I have that correct.
Yes.
And you didn't know how much time you would have when she was diagnosed. But you guys prayed and prayed and prayed that she would be able to see the kids finish high school and then finish college. And then perhaps if they could get married. And all of that happened. Was it over a decade that you walked with her through that illness before she died?
About 12 and a half years.
Yeah.
And at each one of those levels, when they were still in grade school, we were praying, could we just see them both graduate high school? When that happened, we thought, gee, Lord, why not? Can we see them both graduate college? And I have to put a plug in for all the Aggies out there listening, a class of 01 and class of 06. But that happened. And then we thought, what about seeing both of them being married? And we were so blessed to a point that Margie passed a month and a day after Cassie was married in 2007.
I'm so glad you had all those milestone markers together. I'm glad for your children. And I imagine that while you knew in your heart that the day was going to come when she would pass away, do children live with that? Do you think it was, do you think it still came as a huge surprise to them?
I think so, Ron. It was really for all of us, because we kept seeing kind of the roller coaster effect of going down into a valley and rising back up when things looked gloom and doom. She was doing that so many different times on so many different clinical trials and passing each one of them. It was still kind of a shock. We were blessed to see her out of the pain, but we also had to deal with the loss of losing someone we deeply loved.
If my calendar is right, she passed away in June of 2007.
Yes, sir. June 6th, D-Day.
Wow. Well, a few years prior to that, while your loss narrative is one that's long and drawn out, Evelyn's loss of her husband, Rick, was quick and sudden. Evelyn, can you give us a summary of how Rick died?
Sure. We started dating in college. We dated all the way through school. And on our very first date, he told me, when I asked him what he wanted to do, he answered that he wanted to be an astronaut, which was not the answer I expected.
Maybe if you're talking to a six-year-old, that's a typical answer you might get.
Exactly. And he was a freshman in college, and he was serious. So anyway, it was just interesting. We had gone to the same high school. We both grew up in Amarillo, Texas, and went to the same high school, but we really didn't know each other. We knew of each other, but we actually met in college. But anyhow, he shared that with me, and then for the next number of years, we dated, and I watched him check off all the boxes to be a successful applicant with NASA. After several attempts of applications, he was accepted, and so we moved to Houston in 1995, and he began his astronaut training. And he flew in space the first time as a pilot in May of 99. His second mission was in, they launched in January of 2003 on Space Shuttle Columbia. And unfortunately, that mission was not, never saw a successful landing. The crew perished on their way home. So it was a horrible, tragic day for us on February 1st, 2003.
And that was a day that you and the whole world was waiting for them to land. And I know you and your two children were standing with all the other family members, and they didn't arrive, and that just threw everybody into what's going on.
Yeah. Well, we were just in absolute shock. I mean, the mercy of God is that your brain can't process things when you're going through something on that level. And so it felt very surreal. And I just remember looking at the sky when we had watched the clock count down to zero and there was no landing. And Laura and Matthew are holding each of my hands, and we're standing there in silence trying to figure out what's going on. And I just remember looking up at the sky and thinking, I can't believe that this is it. I can't believe that this is the end of his life. I couldn't even process it. And it was several hours before we received confirmation that the crew had all perished in the tragedy. And so we began that long journey of grief and shock and processing.
Bill's loss was a private loss. I mean, you know, cancer, family. Yes, friends and family knew about it and people walked along beside you, but more private than anything. And Evelyn, your loss was public, extremely public. Each of those has their own demands. Each of them puts your children in a bit different position. And I'm really wondering about the kids. Like, how did they deal with those aspects of the loss of their parents? I'm just, you know, here you are a number of years later. Just, you don't have to in great detail, but just looking back, like, what are the things that you remember about how your children coped with all this?
Well, for mine, I mean, it threw them into an anxiety that they'd never experienced before and fear that they'd never known. And to this day, it's a battle with our whole family of trying to wrestle with that and come to terms with it. It creates an awful lot of anxiety when one moment your parent's alive and the next they're not. It's devastating and there's no preparation at all. And so I feel like it'll be a lifelong journey for all of us to just to process that and deal with fear. Fear is very difficult to deal with. And so I think for us, I mean, they have certainly been very functional and been able to have accomplishments, but it's something that rises and falls. And it sometimes I feel like it's triggered also by the calendar. As Bill mentioned earlier, we've just walked through yet another season of the launch and the landing and even our wedding anniversary, which was the end of February, the anniversary of the funeral, which wasn't until 3 weeks later because it took so long to find the remains and then do everything that was necessary before we could bury him. And so it's just a lot of stuff on the calendar to get through.
You know,
and every year I rejoice when it's March.
Yeah.
Just rejoice.
Evelyn, I've heard my wife say pretty much the exact same thing. The calendar is relentless. It will not stop. It's a constant reminder, whether it's our son's birthday or, his death date, or this is the date he started getting sick, and this led to this, and then it led to that. And for us, it kind of starts with Thanksgiving. Connor died in February. I know Rick died February 1st. Connor died February 17th, 2009. And you back up to Thanksgiving because those are holidays, right? So those holidays, then Christmas, and then that rolls into January, and we had a family trip actually down to Houston and where you guys live. And you know, every one of those things just leads to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing until his death date arrives every year. And it's just relentless. And I know my other two children carry those same thoughts. I mean, they're mindful of those things as well. You just mentioned other triggers, anything that reminds anybody of this. So even the latest NASA activity, my guess is it's on the news, it's in the press. That's another trigger for you guys.
It is. And I don't know if I'm a glutton for punishment or if this is actually something that's therapeutic, but I have always in my own grief journey have kind of pushed into the areas of grief instead of running from them. Doesn't mean that I do that all the time, but I've just agreed to serve on the Astronaut Memorial Foundation board. So I'm in Florida 4 times a year now. And in the exact place I was when, you know, I had my worst day ever, I sit at meetings with a picture of the crew staring at me during the meeting. So, you know, I could retreat and go the opposite direction. But honestly, it seems like the more I push in, it helps me deal with it. The grief will never go away, but it really doesn't let it have power over me as much, I guess.
Oh, I like that. I like that. And I think there's some real wisdom there for our listener who's thinking, how do I get past or get over, or, you know, I always say we get through and we don't get over, but one of the ways that we get through things is by pushing into them and not letting them necessarily debilitate us. I think for a season, yes, there's certainly time and place where that's true and we should not feel guilty about that. But it might also be true that one of the ways you move through is to push back a little bit. Bill, I'm wondering about your children. Looking back, you know, what were the big ways that they responded to the loss of their mother?
I agree with Evelyn. I think it was the fear, the unknown of and trying to comprehend at their age. Cassie was in elementary school, and I think Corey, or just finishing elementary school. Mm. Corey was a freshman in high school. I think it just, in the beginning, it kind of knocked them off their feet. What are you talking about? You know, Mom is Grand Central Station. She was known as the hub in our family. Everything communicated to the hub, whether it was in our small circle or the extended family, it all came through there. But for Corey and Cassie, I think each one of them had a different walk where they were in time, whether it was in high school or finishing up elementary school. I think for the most part, I think they coped well from what I could see. We just spent as much time with her as we could. And we did have a long goodbye in some ways. But when it was a goodbye, there was that finalization was finally there. And then I think it's when things became even harder, realizing that this is something we've looked at, we've heard about, and now we're walking through this.
I'm going to try to summarize how you guys got together, and I'm not going to do it justice. Because it's
just say that I hunted him down like a dog, and then it's all good because he loves that version.
Well, let's just go with that. Yeah, feel free to fill in the gaps here. But you guys knew each other, your families knew each other, you went to the same church, and Margie, gosh, she was a therapist. Helping families who were going through grief, a hospice therapist. And she took care of Bill and her kids. I mean, she helped prepare you guys for what was going to happen. She coached you guys along in an amazing fashion. And it was even a moment, Bill, where she playfully said, you know, after I'm gone, I can see you wanting to be with somebody. And, you know, Evelyn is widow. We know her. We've prayed for her. We've walked, you know, in close proximity with her and her loss. She even mentioned Evelyn's name to you. And I remember the first time you told me this, you laughed. You were like taken off guard. That's not where your heart and head was at all. And you even forgot about it at one point. And then after she was gone, Evelyn reached out to you to try to just offer a word of comfort. And lo and behold, you guys decide to have coffee and visit and talk and sort of grieve together. Did I get that right?
Yes. I was probably the grieving fire hose. We had lunch and I just talked about what had happened over the course of the last 30 years of my life with Margie. And Evelyn got a few words in, but I think I was the one pretty much talking and kind of letting it out, basically. And that's what I found. The more times I talked about the loss, whether it was to a coworker or a friend, it helped. It helped me see and remember that. It's almost like from a biblical stance of restacking stones for a memorial, if you will. Each time you told the story, I won't say it got any easier, but it was allowing my heart to do what the heart does. It feels things, and it feels it at such a magnitude that you need a way of letting that out, otherwise it'll burst.
Yeah, wow. Evelyn, you didn't know that Margie had said that to Bill. How long was it before you had heard that story?
Probably 2 to 3 months into where we had decided to start dating. And I just was certain that he was making that up. I just couldn't imagine anybody being that awesome and gracious. But she was, and I did know Margie, and she was an amazing lady. And I know she was treasured by so many people. And I truly can see her caring that much for Bill and loving him that well to give him permission to have life after she passed. And so I just was very amazed by that.
I see her in my kids, Ron, that when I look at them now that they've grown up, I see them tackling things, living life. And I see things that remind me of her every time I see them, something they said, an expression on their face. There's something there that just connects that dot.
That is so neat. Well, for you guys, and I think for a lot of adults, the transition up and out of the pit of pain takes the form of a new love for a lot of people. And you start looking towards the future again, thinking about and praying about the future and this new love or romance relationship that you have. Looking back and just thinking a little bit about the timing of that, the process of how you fell in love and starting your blended family journey. Now, Evelyn, you've got two kids still at home. Bill's kids are already out of the home, but they still count. Boy, do they still count, right? So looking back, what would you say about the timing? What do you wish you knew about children, about grief, about new love for you and what it would mean for them to be part of a blended family? What wisdom would you offer people looking back that whether you had it at the time or not, you know, this is what you've sort of learned from the journey?
Well, I had not dated at all after Rick died. So this is about 4 years later, okay. 2.5 years later. And so this was, I never intended to date. So this was not something that was common for me with my children. And so it was just a huge surprise for them and difficult. They liked Bill. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever met Bill that didn't really like him. He's very likable. But, and I think people are affected the same way with me. It was just difficult not to take it personally of the pain that was with all four of our children. And they all had their own individual pain. Some of it was common with all four, but some was different. And it was just very hard to understand. And to be perfectly honest, I mean, I look back now, it was almost impossible to stop the feelings that Bill and I felt for each other that were growing. And I, to this day, feel very much that it was God ordained that he brought us together. There's no question in our kids' minds either that this is something that's that has not been, sorry, my phone is ringing and I'll just have to start over. Okay. So this was, something that now they see as a huge blessing, but at the time it was just a huge struggle. And I think what I learned and couldn't grasp is that the fact that Bill and I were in a relationship now magnified their loss. And they weren't able to articulate that. And I just didn't understand it. I just thought they were being selfish. And that's horrible on my part. I was being selfish. But all of us were walking a grief journey. And I think it was just trying to understand it and not ever having done it before. We were all newbies at this. The kids were new at this, and Bill and I were new at this. And so we it took us a very long time to understand the logistics of this, that everybody has a different part, and they're all walking a journey of pain.
Ron, I would add to that, we seemed to be traveling at warp speed when we met. Things just kind of took off unexpectedly. And what helped us was friends from the United Kingdom, Angus and Carol Hogg. Angus told us when we got a chance to meet and talk and told him what was going on and we're thinking about getting married and moving dates around and things. He said to me, Bill, you're a naval guy. You know this. You might want to slow your ship down a little bit. And allow people to catch up, allow people to stay in the wake and not be left behind. And I think that's kind of what happened is I think some my kids, for some reason, really felt abandoned, that, gee, Dad just kind of left us here. We're just starting this grief journey, and where's Dad? And if I could do it over again, I think we would slow down and immediately communicate on a level much greater than I did passing through that time period.
Mm-hmm. So you would slow down and tune in to your kids.
Yes.
And try to slow the pace at which you guys move towards marriage.
Yes, I think we would, just to allow everyone to get settled a bit. Some might not settle at all, but giving them an opportunity is something I would like to have done. Doesn't mean I would have wanted to stretch out the and not to wait years to get married. It would mean I would want to just include them in the communication better.
Yeah, we've talked before on this podcast about trying to move towards your kids, even as you're moving towards a new friend, lover, companion, spouse. It's a difficult balance. Like, are we doing enough? Is it, you know, how do we know? Is it too much on this side or on that side? Grieving with your kids, I think that's a really good thought. How do we continue to grieve together even while I am forming this new relationship? Because if they can't grieve with me, then they're sort of left to themselves to figure that out. And that just sort of interferes with them then being able to attach to new step-parents, step-siblings, whatever the case may be, that enter in. So this may be a really hard question, but I'm just curious if you guys have an answer. So looking back, in general, I just heard you, but what would be the logistics of that? Like, how would you slow down? What would it look like? Would you just kind of overtly say to one another, like, we just can't get married this quickly. We've got to put it off a little bit. Is that what it would sound like?
No. I'm not saying that because I think there's many things we would do differently, but I don't think that would be the one thing that we would do differently. If I had it to do over again, I would not wait. And here's why. And I could be judged as being very selfish, but I'm just being very honest. My heart was absolutely shattered when Rick died. And I never believed that I could find love again, especially the godly love that Bill has brought into my life. It was just overwhelming. And I think if I'm fair to say the same for you.
Oh, absolutely.
And he also had invested years of grief into his process of Margie being sick, I think far more than his kids did. I think he had a realistic view and understood that she was definitely approaching her end of life. Maybe he had a better understanding of that than even if his children were told. I just think we always want to be optimistic about it and think there's one more treatment, one more answer. And so I think the death was, although it was a shock, it was very much expected. And he and Margie were able to have quality conversations, which just is beautiful that they were able to have the quality and the in-depth conversations that they were able to have. I don't know how we would do things differently. Be much better listeners, much less talkers, but just as Bill said, just be far more engaged in what they're saying. There was a lot of anger. There was a lot of hurt. There was a lot of feelings that I don't think we could fix all of that. And to be honest, I don't know if we could have fixed it if we'd waited 2 or 3 years. I'm not sure if that would have been the remedy. It just would have made us totally miserable. Bill had already been married, you know, he was married to Margie for 30 years. I was married to Rick almost 21 years. And we just, to this day, we value every single day as such a gift from God and didn't want to wait several years until everybody was happy. I'm sure we could have done it so much better. And we regret deeply the pain that we caused with our 4 children. But we are in such, you know, and I know we'll get to this in a moment. Our family is in such a different place now. I think even if they were each asked that question, I think their answers would be similar. I really do.
Okay, so you came together, and it is what it is, and you're moving forward. Here's one of the questions we're hearing from our listeners and from people as I interact out, speaking engagements and whatnot. It's the, okay, how do we continue to grieve about the past and yet move forward as a new family? There's balance there. You know, one of the things I think you want to try to do is hold space for the person who has died or the divorce that happened if there's a parent in the other home. And you want to continue the grief conversations, even in your new blended family household. Do you have any thoughts about How did you guys do that? How did you honor those people? How did you keep conversation going at holidays and big event days, special days, birthdays? Did you try to bring those people into the dialogue, or, you know, have them present somehow? What would you say there?
Ron, I think Evelyn and I found a really good balance of including our former spouses in conversation, daily conversation, and it's never, ever a taboo subject matter. If someone wants to talk about Margie or Rick, we're open. We want to hear that thought. We want to share that moment with them. I think that's something that's been very helpful to us, is not try to, well, that was the past and we're all about the future. We've brought part of that past with us, and we remember it and we honor it as it's needed to do.
Bill, I think you hit on something I want to make sure our listener catches. Don't have an agenda for your kids moving, getting over the past. That's when you're not listening anymore as a parent, and now you're starting to do and say things to try to minimize their sadness. If they bring something up, you kind of move around it, or you change the subject, or you're not interested in really listening to that great story about their mother or about their dad, whatever the case is. No, sit with it, jump into it, ask for more, contribute. If you're a step parent, did you guys ever feel that awkwardness? Like, if you're the biological parent, it's part of your story too. So of course you want to jump into that memory or that moment and let your child talk. I'm curious, as step parents, when the others were sort of grieving, did you find it awkward to move into that space to say, tell me more?
It hasn't been awkward for me. I'm delighted that they've reached the place of comfortableness that they do that. Mm. So in the beginning, I think everybody felt like they were walking on eggshells. And it was maybe even misinterpreted that one group didn't really care that much about the other group. Nothing could have been further from the truth. I think we were all wanting to handle each other carefully. And so what I have loved is the years have evolved. Bill and I have been married over 14 years now. And just this last Christmas, we watched our family. They stayed with us, even though we all live in the same city, and stayed over for New Year's, and we just had a blast, and they cooked dishes that used to be Margie's favorites, and everybody just, there was just a lot of laughter and fun, and it just thrilled me to death that they felt so comfortable that they realized that there's no lines drawn on this at all. And I think for Bill and I, and why I do believe our marriage was God-ordained, we just treasure each other's heart. We both appreciate the grief process that we've had to walk through, the pain we've had to walk through, and we care deeply about each other. And so we really protect and love each other in that way, and don't feel the competition with Margie and Rick, which has just been astounding, but we don't.
Yeah, no, and you shouldn't, because you're not in competition with them at all. And the moment you feel that and start acting as if you are, then you send off a vibe that says, I'm a threat to kids, to your great heart and attachment to this parent, this person that you love and care for so much and want to preserve in your life. And I'm a threat to that. And you can't, love that person around me. Now you're unsafe. And so that is definitely not the right way to go. I love the advice about listening and trying to tune in and moving toward them in that space. That's even better. So, Evelyn, you've alluded to it a couple of times. Tell us where your family is now. And I'm curious, just sort of in terms of timing and years, you know, when did it sort of turn a corner from when there was, sounds like there was a little tension going on with Bill's kids?
Yeah, it was difficult for them. And I think it was a huge adjustment. And I think that they were misinterpreting that he turned his attention towards me so quickly, and at the time didn't appreciate the fact that he valued marriage and valued that relationship and had such a great marriage with Margie. It was not hard to want that again. We didn't enter into this marriage with baggage that some marriages have to fight. Our only baggage we had was our grief. And so I think that that created tension in the beginning. However, the big game changer for our family were grandchildren. So when those babies started coming.
They're showing me a picture. The listeners can't see this, but that's beautiful right there.
So we are no longer Bill and Evelyn. We're now Grammy and Pops.
Nice.
And so our identity changed, and it's glorious. And so we absolutely adore our four granddaughters. Each family has two. We spend time with them as often as we possibly can. And I think for Bill's children and their spouses, for them to see how happily we rolled into that position in their lives has just been a huge blessing, just a huge blessing. And again, I love it because Margie never had the privilege of knowing her granddaughters, but they still have a name for her and they call her Gigi and they know about her and I'm comfortable talking about her. And it's just been a very healthy experience. And we consider ourselves extremely blessed.
That is absolutely really great. I've often said grandparenting is when your status rises as a step-parent in particular. Yeah. Not always. There's no guarantees there, but frequently that is the journey. If you continue, you know, moving forward with your family and trusting that relationships will deepen and some of the wrinkles will iron out over time. I think that's one of the big takeaways I'm hearing from your journey as well. Let me ask you guys a specific question about parenting and step-parenting over time. In episode number 17 called Grief and the Blended Family, I interviewed Diane Frome, who is author of a book that I really recommend called Step-Parenting the Grieving Child, specifically being a step-parent when the biological parent of the children has passed away. She says that step-parents need to know that early on, their stepchildren will typically, far and away, be more drawn to other biological family members, uncles, aunts, grandparents on the of the deceased parent, that sort of thing. They'll be more drawn to biological family members than they will be to the step-parent. In the beginning, was that your experience as well?
I think so. I would say absolutely a yes on that, Ron. It's taken time to see the migration, if you will, of from biological to the step. I go back to a conversation that Evelyn and I had with you. I think it was in November or December in Houston before we got married. We were thinking, wow, we've come from these two incredible marriages. And we were interrupting your dinner, if I remember. You were trying to grab a bite to eat while you were doing a session down here in Houston with a group of folks, and you allotted us a little time to come in and talk to you. And you said the thing that has stuck with me. He says, give it about 7 years, Bill. And we both looked at each other, thought, we're coming from these absolutely incredible families. What do you mean 7 years? And you went on to say, give it about 7 years when people will start talking to each other. And Ron, almost to a day, it really, as far as seeing something be peeled back, the relationships, it seemed like it took that long to get familiarity, to get trust rebuilt in some cases, just feeling the love. It took time. And I go back to that slowing down. If I could tell one thing to blended families or families that are getting ready to become blended, you really have to slow down. You have to listen, and you need to find your speed that allows others to follow along on your timeline as well.
Yeah, let me press into that for both of you. So 7 years, you kind of look at each other like, what? He doesn't know what he's talking about. During the 7 years, especially early on, how did you sort of slow your roll? How did you mentally, emotionally process okay, I want this definitely more than they want this, you know, more than the kids or more than whatever the dynamics were that seemed to be putting on the brakes. You wanted to be hitting the accelerator. What did you have to tell yourself? How did you manage your anxiety about the pace?
Well, I read your books. That was quite helpful. Underlined it, earmarked it, made all kinds of notes. So that helped me a lot. I didn't realize it's such a different set of skills to be a stepmother than it is to be a biological mother. And I had no idea. I just thought it would be a piece of cake, and it's not. And so that helped me so much understand that there was just a lot of processing going on with everybody, and it was just going to truly take time, and it's a relationship building. And so my biggest goal, and I feel like we have achieved this over time, is that we want our home to be a place of peace. We want our home to be a place that's fun. I want them to look forward to coming over to our home. I want them to feel welcome here and feel like they're a part of this home, that they can come here anytime that they want to and stay as long as they want to, that this is a place that they are very welcome. And so over a long period of time, as we've made and built memories here, I just see that really falling into place. There are so many beautiful things that have happened in our home with our family that it's been very much perceived as Grammy and Pop's house, as Bill and Evelyn's house. And so they come here with the expectation of being loved, of it being a place of peace and a place of fun. And so we really work hard at that and want it to be an enjoyable place for them that we, and it's not that we're avoiding hard subjects. I have had conversations with different ones one-on-one. So that takes place in other areas and in other ways. But just as the family gathering together, we feel like that's just really important.
And there it is. We've come full circle back to the beauty from the ashes. It doesn't get rid of the ashes, though, right? We still miss Rick. We still miss Margie. There are moments where I'm sure that you're looking in the mirror or looking at a photo of your first spouses and you just feel that pain all over again, and you feel that anxiety for your kids. You feel sad for them and your grandchildren who never knew them. And, you know, those moments we carry with us, right? It is what it is. And at the same time, there's love and there's shared peace and there's harmony and you've accomplished so much. You climbed the hill, you know, 7 years or however long it took, like, you know, 14 years in. I listen to you guys and I'm going, okay, there's beauty from sticking with it. If you had one thing to share with somebody who's listening today, who's maybe early on in their blended journey, and they're not feeling real confident about how things are going for them right now, what would you say?
I would say something very short, and I borrow the words of Winston Churchill. Never, 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 never give up. That would be a good starting point, and just realizing there's a lots of starts and stops in getting the blended family moving. I think in your recipe of the crock pot approach of slow cooking things, Ron really helped us to, it's not an idea that you can throw a lot of people together and throw a switch and everybody comes out all right. It takes time and dedicated time of listening and caring and showing how much you care by wanting to listen, even when it might be tears, even crying at times, but being able to wait for that moment to be able to share something loving, something that they need, that part that just brings the peace into the middle of the conversation.
I think lots of prayer.
Yeah.
So I've spent lots of time on my knees. We've spent lots of time together in prayer. And we also have been very blessed to have humor. So you have to not take yourself so seriously, I think, as well, and just be patient with the process, know some things are going to go better than others, and not just put all your eggs in one basket and just think if this doesn't work this weekend, if we don't have a good time, then it's never going to work. That's crazy. That's not true with anything. And so it just takes time and effort, and just to be patient with it, and just to love well. I mean, don't let your compassion get turned off and replaced with judgment. Just be compassionate and love on them the way that you want them to love on you. And eventually, hopefully, that will happen.
You've been listening to my conversation with Bill and Evelyn Thompson. I'm Ron Deal, and this is Family Life Blended. If you need a little encouragement, hang on. I want you to hear what Bill and Evelyn have to say. By the way, if you can relate to their situation, maybe you're step-parenting a child whose biological parent has died, let me suggest that you listen to episode number 17. It's entitled Grief and the Blended Family, and it's an interview with Diane Frome. I think you'll find it very helpful. Hey, if you have a topic or a question you'd like for us to answer on the podcast, feel free to email it to us or leave us a voice message. The show notes will tell you how you can do that. Recently, we actually heard from a widowed mother of three children who just became engaged to a divorced man who also had three children. She had many financial questions, including what to do about the house that he built before meeting her. You see, as it turns out, that house is a prized possession for him, and he's adamant about not selling it. Well, he also says things that make her cringe, like, my house, my investment. Wow. Okay. You know, situations like this have so many layers to them. There's relational matters, there's trust issues, estate planning. It's all wrapped up in there somewhere, which is why I teamed up with a financial planner and an estate attorney to write the Smart Step Family Guide to Financial Planning. You've got to pull the layers of a question like this apart. You got to look at each of them, and then you got to try to put it together to find a solution. And that's what we essentially tried to do in that resource. So I suggest you get a copy. I suggest you also listen to episode number 19. It's called Financing Togetherness in Blended Families. That will give you a quick overview of some of the concepts that you'll read about in much more detail in that book. I hope that will help answer your question. If you'd like more information about my guest, you'll find it in our show notes, or you can just look on the Family Life Blended podcast page at familylife.com/blendedpodcast. And if you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, please do. That way you won't miss any of our future episodes. And let me tell you, there's some good ones coming. Hey, do me a quick favor. Tell a pastor about our next Summit on Step Family Ministry. Or maybe you just add it to your own calendar if you want to make a difference in the lives of others and learn how to do that. The summit is October 13 through 14, 2022 in Phoenix. Our theme this year is Reveal, Grace and Loss in Blended Families. Now, this is a two-day in-person training event that brings together leaders and experts from various disciplines and churches so you can network with others and learn how to help blended families. Now, this is an in-person event only. It's not live streamed. So get it on your calendar and make plans to be with us. Visit summitonstepfamilies.com for all the details. That's summitonstepfamilies.com, or just look for a link in the show notes. Okay, let's get back to Bill and Evelyn's response to my question.
The humor aspect is a big part of it. Amy, my daughter-in-law, got a t-shirt made for me, and it said, all my dad jokes come from my database. And it's, you know, it's kind of like, I guess, that dad humor, dad jokes. Every once in a while, there's one that, truly brings laughter from all.
They're so painful.
They are painful, but yeah. they're wonderful at the same time.
Next time, we're going to hear from Kara Powell and Gayla Grace about the big questions that children are asking and how to navigate that when you and the other home don't see eye to eye. That's Kara Powell talking with Gayla Grace and me next time on Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our monthly donors who make this podcast possible. If you'd like to join our Family Life Partner Program or just simply say thank you with a donation, you can do so. Look in the show notes for a link. Our producer is Marcus Holt, mastering engineer Jarrett Roski, project coordinator Ann Ancaro, and theme music composed and performed by Braden Deal. Family Life Blended is part of the Family Life Podcast Network, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.